We are going to go ahead and record this just so...
I think they heard that.
Oh, okay.
We so can't miss everything.
Did you hear that? We are recording?
Yep.
Okay.
So the recording is counting as one. So it's
okay. Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, we're going to wait for a couple minutes. Did either of you receive the SCAR classification document I sent out?
I have it.
Okay. Okay. That's great.
I reviewed it very briefly.
Okay. Well, it's a very brief document, so it was essentially just a very loose framework that allowed us to sort of get on the same page and be talking about the same things. And I kind of anticipated that we would, as we go through the discussion today, delve into the different classifications perhaps a little bit deeper. So we, I think from the Cyton side, we have a quorum. We're waiting for a couple other physicians to join us, Dr. Bowen and Dr. Hibner.
So what other
Who's here right now? Dr. Posner's here?
Yep.
Okay. Any other doctors?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Okay.
Cyton.
Dr. Posner, have you used Sculptra like before laser resurfacing before, and have you found that it may help at all?
I haven't tried it like before, but we use a lot of Sculptra.
Okay.
I haven't really tried it before the lasers. People saying that works better.
I've heard, and I've been trying it myself, and I've been trying it. Before profractional also. I'm diluting the Sculptra kind of like 12, in, like one bottle into 12 cc's.
Right.
Rather than a traditional 6 or 8.
Right.
And, yeah, I'm seeing some improvement. It's kind of early to tell whether or not...
For acne scars or for something else?
For both, resurfacing and acne scars.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Someone just joined us.
It's Bob Bowen.
Hey, Bob, how are you? This is Jim Hobart here.
Hey, I'm doing great.
Thanks so much for joining us. We're waiting for one other invited physician to join us.
Okay.
Phone on the invitee list is Bob Bowen, Jason Posner's on, Michael Lynn is on, and we are waiting for Chad Hibner to join us. And then we have a number of Cyton folks, not the least of which is Jim Hobart.
Okay.
Okay. Great. Dr. Bowen, did you get the SCAR classification document I sent out?
Yes, I did. Thank you.
Excellent.
Do you agree with it?
I don't know if you can disagree with it. It's just a classification method, I guess. I haven't had a chance to really go over it too closely, but keloid scars are typically contraindicated. That's something that might be controversial.
That might be what?
Controversial.
I don't know that burn scars take 18 to 24 months. My experience is maybe a little bit less than that. But at least 10, 12 months anyway.
The other thing about keloids is, I guess I would say that what I've commonly heard is that keloid formers should not be treated with lasers. But that doesn't necessarily say that you couldn't treat keloid scars with lasers.
Right.
So I agree that, let's maybe not take any of the lore.
I've had a lot of success treating keloid scars with lasers, actually.
That's Bob.
I do a combination of treatments, the interlesional canalog with 5-FU injection. I use leaching cream, like a triple bleach, and NDAG, and I use profractional, and it works really well.
Interesting.
Yeah, would you do all of those, you do them subsequently, or you do them kind of at the same time? I mean, maybe
I do them
not,
on the
not
same
in the
day.
Same, not in the same session, but.
I do it on the same session.
Really? Okay.
I do everything on the same session. Yeah.
Doctors. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh no. Are we still waiting for somebody?
We are, but it's we're going to lose Dr. Posner before too long. He's got another engagement. So
I canceled it with my kidney stones. I'm here for a while.
Oh, okay, fantastic. As kidneys have saved this. Sounds like we were just joined by someone.
Hi, Doug.
Hi, Doug. Okay, we definitely have a quorum. If I could ask our invited doctors to just give a brief introduction about yourself, where you practice. Sort of just a very high-level overview of your involvement with treating scars, and we'll also sort of do the same on the Cyton side. Dr. Posner, want to start
us? Sure. Jason Posner, Boca Raton, Florida. Been treating scars with erbium for a long time. I mean, basically almost every blepharoplasty we do, we kind of burn down the scars with a regular 2-millimeter spot size. Been doing that for years and years and years, and taking down hypertrophic scars for years doing the same thing. I'm starting to do some more profractional things, but haven't really been able to really quantify the data at all. And then, obviously, in the literature, there's a lot of stuff about vascular lasers, so we've always tried vascular lasers on red scars. But I can tell you from the meetings I've been to lately, which have been quite a few, there's a lot of scar information on the meetings. It's almost every time there's somebody talking about something. So it's definitely a hot topic.
Yeah. Okay. Dr. Lin.
Okay, yeah. My name is Michael Lin. I'm a dermatologist in the Los Angeles area. I'm doing a lot of work with scars. I don't know if you guys know, workers' comp often pays for scars, so I have quite a few workers' comp patients getting scar treatment. You know, the insurance agents don't want the attorneys, on them, so they'll pay for the scar treatment. I have a personal history with acne and acne scars, so I have a special interest in acne scars. I do a variety of treatments, including punch excisions, punch elevations, TCA cross. I started doing Sculptra under the acne scars. I do subcision and profractional and erbium, so I try to use. I do skin tightening too, although I don't with the ST. I don't know if it really does much.
What are the workers' comp scars that you're treating? Are those traumatic of some sort?
Yeah. I've had there's one case where it was a technician that was working under a fume hood, and it came down and hit him on the nose. He had a huge laceration on his nose. And another case, a lady fell, and has a huge scar down her left arm. And then another one is an FBI agent, shrapnel, like in his forehead and his back. And in every case, the insurance company is eager to get that resolved.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks for the intro. Dr. Bone, can you give us a brief intro?
Yes, hi, I'm Robert Bowen. I practice in Martinsburg, West Virginia. I'm a clinical associate professor at West Virginia University. My primary specialty was actually intensive care and pulmonology. I have my first exposure to scars was in my training when I was taking care of patients that were in the burn unit. So I've been interested in scars since then, but I haven't been treating them until, burn scars the last 24 months. Prior to that, I've been treating acne scars, surgical scars, and I use a variety of things for acne scars, like Dr. Lin, subcision and punch biopsies occasionally for the ice pick scars that don't respond very well to the laser treatment. And the profractional has just been a miracle for my patients. Also, I've had I've also had experience with lately with burn scars, which actually were sent to me by Workman's Comp. There was a an accident at a plant close to where I live, where there was a number of ladies working there that were burned in a propane explosion.
Ooh.
And Workman's Comp has sent them to me, and the perfractional has been a miracle for these people.
What kind of settings? I know you gave this at the user meeting, but remind us of the settings that you were using.
Well, that's the settings depend on the scar, basically the thickness of the scar, and the approach that I used. Actually, the first patient that I treated after the first treatment, she was. You know, the skin that was not involved with the burn, you know, looked a lot better. The burn itself really hadn't changed very much, and so I thought I needed to try a different approach, and I turned up the juice and just kept going until I was able to get pinpoint bleeding, knowing at that point that I was through the area of the scar. And what I found was, and subsequently this has proven to be true, that scars are quite variable in their thickness, and you know, even the same scar, different regions of it may have different characteristics and different thickness. So I treat depending on how thick it is, and the end point that I have been doing is the onset of pinpoint bleeding. What we would, you know, in aesthetics, we say that that's papillary dermis, but if you're talking about a third degree burn scar, there isn't any dermis, so that's histologically incorrect. But it does seem to work much better if you get all the way through the scar, and then the characteristic cascade of heat shock proteins and et cetera. I suspect I haven't done the histology or the immunochemistry or whatever, but I would like to do that to see actually what's going on. But that approach has been very successful for me.
What's the density that you're using with the profractional on these?
I started off at 5.5%. Well, actually, the first patient I treated, I didn't have the XC yet, so I started very conservative, like 3%. Since then, they get better faster the more density that that I use. So today, the patient that I treated, I did. She had scars on her hands, burn scars on her knuckles, especially were very thick, and so in those areas, I was doing three passes of 11%, and as deep as 1,200.
Not to interrupt you, it sounds like we were just joined by someone.
Lars.
Oh, hi, Lars. Lars is he's in sales at Cyton. Basically, where we are as a company is there's been a lot of sort of buzz recently about scars and using lasers to treat scars. There's been I think as we've been starting to think about this, this is what led us down the road of trying to classify scars. You know, there's certainly a lot of different morphologies or special characteristics that might affect how we treat them, when we treat them, and with what we treat them. So that was kind of what we were looking at with this scar classification. And I think I'm coming at it from a very nascent perspective. I certainly don't have the background in this, and as we look through this, if there's certainly other types of morphologies or characteristics that we need to consider to be differentially treated, I'd love for this group to give some input if we're missing anything or what.
Well, one question I keep raising is if you drill a hole in a scar and a tissue regrows into it, because I have evidence on myself at least, that revascularized tissue grows into it. But surely there must be a fair amount of literature on this. We've talked to doctors over the years who have said, well, I used to treat scars using a very small 1 millimeter punch, just punching out little holes. And the tissue that regrew looked a lot better than the tissue I took out. Can you comment on that?
Yes, there's actually there's an article. I just submitted a manuscript for some case studies to, I can't remember which burn journal it was. The editor is in Chicago, but for that I did a literature search on this, and there was a study from Berlin, Cologne, Germany, Dr. Eberlein, who used erbium YAG laser with a 1 millimeter spot and just skipping spots. Essentially, this is from 2004, so basically he did this with, you know, he did a fractional treatment before we had such a device.
Hmm.
And has pretty good, certainly good good results compared to what people were seeing before. I think there's two things that happen. One is that the you resect the scar tissue, you ablate vaporize that, so you're debriding or eliminating the scar tissue, and then what grows in. Seems to be healthier.
And vascularized?
And vascularized, yes.
Yeah.
And in the cases that I've seen of these ladies in the propane explosion, repigmented to some extent also.
Hmm.
There are reports of some of the needling getting repigmented as well.
Yes, right.
The side thing would be, can we treat vitiligo?
Don't know.
Well, I know the laser that I'm familiar with to treat vitiligo is the UV. I think
we have
UVC.
It's an excimer.
The excimer, the one the ophthalmologist uses.
We have one in Florida.
Okay.
The RA.
But it seems like it's a simple experiment if you just drill holes in
some white scars.
Yeah. See what grows back.
Pattern.
So where are the needs in the areas of scars? I mean, where are the opportunities to just take what's being done out there and publish on it, or what?
Fresh scars versus old scars. You know, there's always been this anecdotal evidence that after you make a scar, a couple of weeks later, if you resurface it, it'll look better.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually talking to Goldberg about this weekend. The best person to talk to is a Mohs surgeon. You know, they have so many scars going through their practice, and they could just close up something and do half of one and then half and not the other half.
Okay.
He might be willing to do that study, actually, his fellow. It's a pretty easy case, 10 cases. Just resurface it and then get someone else to do some fractional on somebody.
Okay.
There's a study that was this spring in the Lasers and Surgery and Medicine where they were, that was a 1540 or 1550 laser where they did, I guess you'd call it the split scar study. Where they treated a strip of the scar and left untreated tissue on either side, and then did a series of treatments and had pretty good luck with that. That's from Denmark. That's Heiderstahl. I'm looking at my bibliography. That's why I remember these authors' name. But that's from Lasers and Surgery and Medicine, March, I believe.
Maybe we could collect.
and distribute
material
the,
and
the articles.
There's been a lot of articles lately. In the NICE meeting I just went to, someone was showing fractional treatment on top of skin grafts. The results look phenomenal.
Yeah.
Do you remember who that was?
No.
What kind of skin grafts are you talking about? Split thickness or full thickness?
Split thickness. They were resurfacing them. It looked phenomenal.
The the mesh pattern, the grid that you get, seems to respond really well to fractional treatment. You can smooth that out. I've had one patient in this group that had a skin graft that's had really nice results from the perfractional.
Hmm. What about non-ablative fractional? Seen some...
What are you talking about?
Oh, okay. That was the non-ablative.
15,
14, 40.
Oh, okay, right.
The non-ablative, it seems to help. A lot of things seem to help. And ablative CO2 has also been used, and I'm only aware of case reports on that. No... controlled studies, but it does seem to be Dr. Wabel from
she was using CO2.
Was using CO2. She did 15-40 and initially, and then abandoned it for CO2 and found it to be more effective. I suspect that that erbium is going to be a better tool. Going forward,
Because of the less necrotic tissue left behind.
Because of less thermal damage. Intuitively, if thermal damage is what caused the problem, then using more thermal damage may not be the best.
Good point.
But the thing is with the perfractional or with our machine, you can, if you have a hypertrophic scar that's raised, you can put it on full field ablation, plane the scar down flat, and then change the handpiece, and in 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's it allows a lot of flexibility.
Can someone comment on using the profractional coag? I haven't tried it with the star treatment before. The coag versus the no coag.
Well, if you take Bob Bowen's comments, he would say you don't want coag. But on the other hand, in the interest of science, we probably should compare the two.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting to compare it. I started off not using it and had really good results, so I haven't felt compelled to do it. Outside the bounds of a study where it would be useful, but treating patients in the clinic, it's different than doing a study.
Yeah. Do you think there's times when non-ablative would be preferred to ablative?
Try it.
Any types of
maybe some of the darker skin patients.
Okay.
This is a whole new ball game. There's a lot of people writing stuff about it, but people don't have a handle on this.
Mm-hmm.
You could also talk to some of the scar guys. There's a guy who may be retired now, named Kelman Cohen,
mm-hmm.
from Virginia, who was a real big consultant in this business. One of my buddies trained with him. I can get him to see if he's interested in talking to you guys.
Okay. Thank you. Be great.
So I do a lot of surgical excisions because I do Mohs surgery and skin cancer surgery. How would that work in, as in, like, financially for the patient? Like, would they – some of them, they have insurance or Medicare, and they don't want to pay for these scar treatments. I just kind of wonder how that would work in. If anyone has any suggestions on that. Because I know in cosmetics, you would probably want to include it in your package because you want it to look nice because they're your cosmetic patient, but for insurance patients, if they're not getting any reimbursement, I found it hard to get them to come back to, you know, get treatment for their scars.
Well, that certainly applies to one class of people, but people will pay for a facelift. Seems like they would pay to have an ugly scar removed. Is that not the case?
Package it with the facelift.
Yeah, I guess that's what I'm saying. Yeah, if you include it with a cosmetic procedure, then yes, you can include it in the package. But for a routine surgical scar, first of all, you don't know how it's going to heal, and patients are oftentimes reluctant to get an additional fee for, let's say, a skin cancer they want to remove paid by Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering, for these kind of more medical cases, if anyone thought of something, some way to
be able to bill for it, you mean?
Well, insurance going to pay.
Yeah.
Insurance companies will pay.
I haven't. Patients that come to me with the scars that they want to get rid of are willing to pay cash, with the exception of the the workman's comp cases, which most of those ladies, they're working in a factory. They wouldn't have the means to pay cash for it if it wasn't for the insurance covering it.
Bob, I remember your humorous remark at the user meeting that these women wanted to get those scars fixed so they could go back to work in the plant that burned them.
Right. But, Bob, your point is there's functionality that's restored, and they're willing to pay for that, but not for cosmetic. That's correct. And this in this case, the hypertrophic scars that limit, especially on the hands, that limit joint mobility. If a factory worker can't use her hands, then she's going to have disability. So that's certainly something that an insurance company or society will get a bargain for that. But when it's purely cosmetic, it's pretty hard to talk insurance companies these days into approving that.
But I think what's also being said is that those ladies perhaps didn't have the means, but there are people with means that will pay to have scars removed.
Yes, there's no doubt about that.
I mean, so to break this up, I mean, you have two kinds. You have to really look at your fresh scars and your older scars. So you might have to approach them a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm. How do you treat those differently, Jason?
Usually the older scars, we don't mess with them too much, but this is an opportunity to mess with them. But the fresher scars, we resurface them down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So your blepharoplasty scars, Jason, at what point after surgery are you treating
like
2 them?
2 weeks, 3 weeks.
2 or 3 weeks, okay.
Yeah. Anything raised a little bit there, but that's the main area.
How aggressively do you treat them, Jason?
How aggressively? 2 millimeter spot, just 10 microns, just kind of playing it down. We're doing that for scars all over, but fresh scars. I mean, there's a lot of history in this. I think before we kind of go down this route, I mean, I think we should start looking up the history a little bit more, because there's a lot of research on dermabrasion of fresh scars.
Okay.
Right. I do. If we can get emails of everybody, I can send this bibliography that I have, this literature search that I did on scars. That there's 12 references that we can use as a jumping off
yep.
point.
Yeah, no problem. I'll give those to you. Lars.
Okay. There's been a lot on the. You guys look at the MD links.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sound like.
Any of you get MD links?
No.
No.
No, they're these links you get on the internet. They come to me every day, and they have this synopsis of different articles out there. And there's been a lot of scar articles lately.
Hmm.
I'm looking at one right now.
Yeah, MD links. You can choose different specialties and different emphases to get weekly or daily updates.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. I'm always getting. There's always been scar stuff the last couple of months.
Yeah, some of us get that.
Why do you think there's more presentations and writing about it now about scars? Is there just some new
fractional stuff?
Methods of treating. Okay.
Yeah. Everyone. I mean, basically, they took this fractional technology and just tried it for everything.
Okay.
Seems to work.
Okay.
Anyone want to try some different spot sizes? We've made some scanners in the past, some profractional scanners that deliver a 750 micron spot diameter.
Yeah, we're back to the same questions: larger, or smaller, which is better?
Yep.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think we know the answer to that yet.
I mean, I still have a 750 lying around. Just got to take off the handpiece, right?
Right.
Hey, just an off-the-topic question. Have any of you seen the Mixto laser?
Yeah.
I've seen it at a show, yeah.
Yeah, somebody, well, I was at a doctor's office the other day who had it, and he was showing some good results with it. They have a non-sequential pattern on that device.
Yes, right.
Do you think that might change the pain threshold of the fractional if you change it to non-sequential?
No.
It does seem that that by the end, especially when you're using a larger size, like, you know, 6, 7, 8,
right?
By the time you get done with the scan, the people, you know, when you're an hour of topical, sometimes they will cringe a little bit at the last scan. So
right.
If it's because of the thermal effect bleeding over into the tissue, then doing something random might be less uncomfortable.
It might be, but the main reason for non-sequential is to avoid pulse stacking.
Right.
And especially if you have an ablative system, especially with an erbium system where you're cleanly ablating, the pulse stacking is not to worry about. But I guess my caution flags go up when I hear non-sequential because it's a widely used marketing argument. Oh, we have a non-sequential scan.
Yeah, we use it for hair removal, and
right.
We like it for that.
Right.
I just wondered if it would do anything for the...
Yeah, it's important in hair removal because you don't want the heat, the residual heat from the adjacent spot to contribute to your next spot. We played with it some, Jason. That I haven't noticed much difference in the pain sensation.
Got it.
This is Chad Hibner. I'm sorry I joined a little bit late. I've been listening to y'all
Welcome.
A little bit, and you know, I know that from the CO2 aspect, you know, the deep FX versus the active FX. I know that the active is significantly more painful. So to address the sequential versus non-sequential, I think that may be more related to overall energy delivered, you know, superficially, and so you get more bulk heating. And I think that would be the advantage of the non-sequential. But honestly, you know, depending on what your goal is in designing a new system, are you going to do, you know, large scars, or are you going to do like the scars like what I see? And for those of you who don't know me, I'm in the military, and so we're seeing a lot of burn scars in the soldiers. And so we're talking like huge body surface areas. And so the non-sequential, at least, is, you know, been a little bit more, you know, slower. I mean, it depends on the software area. So that, you know, along that argument, I'm sorry, I missed most of the other previous discussions, but in that regard.
No, thanks for joining us when you could. Could you give just a brief intro? You sort of started doing that already.
Yeah.
Sort of your history with lasers, you know, what the military is doing with regard to scar treatment.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a dermatologist. I don't know if everyone's a dermatologist or not, but I have been in the military for a long time. Air Force Academy, I'm trained at dermatology at Penn. Been couple different areas, Omaha and Las Vegas, and now I'm an associate program director down here at the in San Antonio, where we have Army and Air Force residency. I do pretty much most of the lasers down here. We have 21 residents total. I do, I'm pretty much the main person at this point, actually the only person treating the Warriors. I originally started with a Cycon laser to kind of as a proof of concept, and for speed reasons and other reasons, I kind of made the transition to the CO2 Encore at this point, and have been using that for, I guess, 8 months now, and treated, I don't know, 300 plus different, you know, treatments, you know, multiple treatments on some patients, those type of things, but probably up to 300-400 treatments total on, you know, extensive scars. So, with the CO2 in particular.
Pretty extensive.
Yeah, I mean, I know TEN's not supposed to scar, but when my first patient was a TEN patient, she was a 15-year-old that had 90% body surface loss. And the subsequent scarring, I've done biopsies on her. She was about mid-dermal is where most of the scarring was. And she was one of the first patients I treated. We tried multiple different modalities. We tried the Fraxel, the non-ablative. We tried the Cycon, and we tried the CO2 on her, and, you know, kind of let her decide on where she wanted to go from there. But like I was saying, the original fractionated device was the Cycon, and I still see some of the patients back that I've been treating, have treated with that. So that's been my experience.
Which method do you prefer of those, the non-ablative, the CO2, or the erbium?
I've been highly under-impressed with the non-ablative Fraxel. It really, you get bulk eating way too quick, and, you know, the type of scars that, you know, we see, it's just, you get the undulating contours. It's like the chicken wire, you know, the soot thickness skin grafts versus, you know, the cords and bands or the contractures, and, you know, you can't have a roly-poly over those type of contours. So that's why, you know, we went with the Cycon and then eventually with the CO2, you know, and there's advantages to both. Originally I've been delving more and more into the type 6 skin with the CO2, but I was very reluctant, especially at the start, to do type 6 skin with the CO2. And so I was primarily reserving my type 5 and 6 skin with the Cycon, but I've been, you know, kind of using both to see how things go and improve. You know, I mean, certainly what's amazing is that in the Cycon, I've seen some beautiful repigmentation in normal skin right where the Cycon spot size was. But, you know, everywhere else, to kind of go back to the sequential, non-sequential, you know, everywhere else in between was, you know, the hyperpigmented area. And so it wasn't really benefiting, diffusely, but it certainly was amazing results, you know, where you actually got treatment. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's, and that's one thing that I like about the Encore in particular is because of the deep and the active. I mean, you get the different spot sizes, so you get different modalities and different, you know, techniques on things. So,
talking about switching between active and
what's that?
You're talking about switching between active and deep FX?
Yes, you know, for different, whatever your endpoint is, you know. I mean, some of these guys, I do deep everywhere because their scars are so darn thick. I mean, there's no sense in doing the active. And that was one thing that, you know, if you're going to do an erbium, you need to be able to do it to where you're going to get some depth of penetration at a certain particular speed in order for it to be effective for my purpose. There's more and more data out there about fractionated devices and their use in, you know, post-op scars and all that kind of stuff. It just depends on what your end game is, on how you design things.
Could we have a dialogue with you and Mike and myself? Because we certainly have the capability to make a variable spot fractional.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is, you know, the biggest thing, I mean, there's so many different things. I mean, if you see some of these scars, I mean, I'm actually giving a talk at the ASCS on this. That's a hot topic of discussion. And so, you know, we're going to kind of be, you know, you'll see some of the different types of scars and what we're seeing. And so, you know, that's a long-term goal. I mean, to start out with, you gotta go deep enough to get that collagen remodeling.
That's the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of October.
Yes. My talk is on that Thursday night.
Thursday night. Okay.
Where is it?
Desert Springs, Arizona.
Yeah.
Outside of Phoenix.
Right. So.
You got to go?
Yes. Yeah.
But anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt, but that's
No, that's...
Sure. No, it's very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Dr. Hibner, one of the things we were talking about earlier was, you know, where are the holes? Where are the treatment gaps? What new tools are needed? You know, from lasers or what variations on a theme? I kind of hit on that with variable spot size or asymmetric patterns for pain. So that's sort of a it's going to be our ongoing question.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different questions to answer. You know, the pathophysiology, what wavelength of light is going to be ideal.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what multimodality therapy? I mean, you know, do you do Kinlog before or after? Do you do pulse dye before or after? Do you do, you know, 1064 for pigments? I mean, there's so many different, you know, nuances that, you know, it's going to take so many different investigators to do, you know, to explore these that I think that, and that's honestly, you know, like I'm doing a webinar for Luminance. I'm not getting paid for it because, frankly, at this point, you know, I mean, I want to start getting the word out there and I want to start, you know, getting some of these things investigated and looked at because, you know, it's me who's seeing the guys and frankly, the pain is the biggest issue, bar none. I mean, I've gotten two or three guys already that, you know, aren't going to do any more treatments, and I just treated their face specifically because it is an incredibly painful procedure.
Let's see. One
thing that I talked about at the users meeting in Chicago related to that was that one of the ladies that I treated, the burn scars had she was scheduled to come back for follow-up in 2 or 3 days, and she said, "I'm never coming back there again," you know, and she really didn't complain about pain during the treatment, and my staff said, "Well, you know, you don't have to have another treatment, but you really need to come back and get checked," and she came back, and when I talked to her, it became clear that she had a post-traumatic stress response. What we pinned it down to was the smell. She said that's what it was. It was my flesh burning is what reactivated her post-traumatic stress. So subsequent to that, we've occluded her nose. And she came back. She had another treatment today.
Breathing is an option.
Breathe through the mouth.
Well, I mean, I'm very fortunate that I have OR privileges, and, you know, there's very few people that I don't take back to the OR, you know, because of the pain, because of the smell. I mean, when I'm really aggressive and I, you know, cause second-degree burns on these guys again, it does bring back memories, and it's not pleasant for me to, you know, look at them eye to eye afterwards, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Right.
Chad, since you've used CO2 and you've used erbium now, maybe you could comment then on if you think there are any benefits into the added amount of coagulation that you get with CO2 versus erbium. Is there an advantage? Is there a need for it?
If you want my honest opinion, I believe that's part. I mean, and there's some science. There's one or two papers out there that show that CO2 in particular may be because erbium hasn't been looked at in these, you know, modalities, but that It may help normalize TGF-beta. And I personally feel, and you know, only through studies is this going to be validated, but I personally believe that that area of coagulation that's around the area of ablation is important. And the reason why I think that is because people, these quote-unquote fast healers that get out of the ICU really quick or out of the burn units really quick, it's hard to make assumptions, but they are the ones that get the hypertrophic and keloidal scarring more so than the other guys. I mean, there's all different types of scars that we're seeing, but these hypertrophic and keloidal scars are the ones that are these quote-unquote fast healers. And so the analogy that I use with my guys is it's the tortoise versus the hare. And I think that area of ablation is vital, and that's what, you know, erbium can do as well, is that erbium goes in there and it lyses the tissue. But I think that area of coagulation surrounding that, you know, cylinder allows for slower resorption and slower remodeling of the tissue. That's my theory, you know, just because of some of the things that I've been seeing as far as improvement in lysis and those, I just want a slower remodeling rather than the fast, you know, what would be analogous to just a split thickness or full thickness skin graft on it, you know, where it's going to heal spontaneously and quick. You know, I want the slower remodeling over time. You know, and that's just kind of like a gut instinct on some of the things that I've been seeing. But you certainly do get improvement after 3 or 4 days, but that has a tendency, once the collagen reforms. And actually, I think, my personal belief is that massage therapy is completely underrated with these guys, and we really got to get on massaging this so that your whatever collagen is being reformed is that you're going to be lengthening or increasing the elasticity or that potential elasticity of the collagen as it reforms after you've gone in there and done the ablation. And that is, I think, the most important aspect. And I can guarantee you that's going to be more important, at least at my knowledge right now, that is more important than the wavelength. But I do think that the wavelength may be important. And that's just been kind of been my gut. You know, having used all the different modalities, I just don't know though. I mean that's just only through studies okay. Is that going to be validated?
Okay.
But I definitely the massage therapy is something that regardless of what we do, I've been talking to. There's an RN that is also a massage therapist here in town that treats some of these guys, and it is. I'm trying to understand massaging better so that we can instruct the guys on how to do, like even maybe do a course on how to massage your areas after treatment. That's how important I think it's going to be.
My 5-year-old daughter got a little traumatic scar on her forehead, and I did some spot massage on her, and I definitely felt it. Felt the induration go down and the appearance of the scar definitely appeared better after massage. And I really had to focus on it. And I mean, this is obviously just a small microcosm, but I can certainly see how that would apply to much larger collagen remodeling.
Chad, when you're doing CO2, are you doing active and deep on every one of those people, or
no.
Is there how do you differentiate the two?
Well, it really depends on the depth of remodeling I want to do. I mean, initially I was only doing, you know, deep, and then on rare patients I do deep and active. What I notice is that, you know, for instance, one example is when you do a split thickness skin graft, you know how that you get that the meshing, it almost looks like chicken wire. Well, when that gets placed onto the skin, the hypertrophic scars that develop from that still reside and are still there. So you still see the chicken wire and you still feel the chicken wire. Well, after you go through with a deep, you actually get, if you were to close your eyes and rub your hand over it, you can't feel it. you cannot feel the difference. You cannot feel that underlining contour. But if you were to look at it or take a picture of it, you still see it. Now, why that's the case, I don't know. And so what I started to do is be more aggressive with the active. But all I've been doing is just pissing the guys off because the active seems to hurt more than the deep does.
Mm.
And so I just don't know what the answer is. I don't know how to make it cosmetically more perfect. You know, I'm a perfectionist, and I want it to be back to as normal skin as possible. But I'm just not getting there, and I just don't know. That's the one thing I can't tweak yet.
Okay. What kind of densities are you using with deep and active? Or what amount of skin taken? 15, are you using like 15% with deep?
No, yesterday was the first day I ever did anyone with 15%. And that was in an old scar, like 10, 15 years old, in a patient that I had been treated multiple times. And it was actually one of the first patients I used the Cyton on. She was the first one I ever did 15% on, because most of the time when I use above 10%, even when I use 10% in high energy, you get desquamation. You almost get a second degree burn. You get sloughing of that skin. It all depends, and it depends on, and I'm going to talk about this on the webinar and in my talk on at the ASDS as well, but it all depends on the age of the scar, the location, kind of the integrity. I know that's a very vague term, but the integrity, the gestalt that you get with the skin. I mean, if it looks like the epidermis is very thin, and like if you were to look at it histologically, that, you know, there would be no reedy ridges, and there's very, you know, there's a lot of scar there, but the epidermis is very friable, and you kind of get that sense of in some of these patients. And almost invariably, if I use 10% density on that type of an area, it's going to come off. And I pretty much desquamated this guy's entire left temple the other day, and I knew it was going to happen. But I've always been a 5% guy, because I think that you want to do, again, slow, methodical, tortoise versus the hare remodeling, and not try to be, you know, the hero and try to do it too quick. But I've been talking to some other people. They've been using higher densities, like on older scars and all these kind of things. And so, you know I don't realize how to fix everything. And so I've tried it on a couple patients, and I realized that, holy cow, you know, I was right. I'm not doing any more 10% densities. Mm. And it's just.
And then what depth do you, what settings are you using as far as, can you relate that to depth? And obviously, it's going to vary, I guess, from scar to scar, but
right.
On average, where are you? Or do you have a range?
Anywhere from 25 to 50.
Okay.
I mean, I'm maxing it out on some of them. You know, I mean, I'm not trying to be vague, but, I mean, it really depends on the patient and my gut instinct. I'm never aggressive the first time around. I'm always, because everyone's, you know, I mean, let's think about this conceptually. I mean, what is absorbing the erbium yag? What's absorbing the CO2? I mean, the water. So, you know, and every person's, you know, intrinsic, you know, water content is going to be different, and everyone's scar is going to be different. Every location, you know, the arm versus the chest, it's going to be different on the amount of hydration and interstitial fluid and intracellular and intercellular fluid. And so I always kind of, you know, am conservative the first time around and see what kind of a reaction I get.
Is it 25 to 50
millijoules on the deep
edge?
Millijoules. Yeah, I mean, the Luminous has limited it to 50. I mean, it can go up to 220, but they've limited it to 50 because of safety reasons. No one before I started doing this ever got to 50. You know, I mean, why would you go to 50? I mean, why do you need to go that deep? I mean, it's just not necessary unless you're doing these big hypertrophic thick bands that you gotta, you know, go, you know, many millimeters in depth.
Do they give you a conversion between millijoules and depth?
Well, it's. I
got it, Jim. I can send it to you.
They have some rough.
There is a chart.
there's a rough guide. I mean, I honestly have never even seen the rough guide because I just go based on my experience. I'd be curious to see that chart, actually. If you...
Yeah, it's 700 or 800 microns.
Yeah, I can email to you.
50 is 800?
700 or 800,
yeah.
Yes.
Are you sure? Because I thought like 20 millijoules was going to be like in the 700 micron region. That's what I kind of thought. I don't know. I may maybe mistaken, but I thought... You know, that's why most people, you know, for cosmetic reasons, were using like 20 millijoules because they're getting about 800 microns worth of depth.
Or EPFX.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I'd be curious to see what chart you guys have, because I honestly have never, I've never looked.
120 microns.
Yeah, that's what they claim, but someone suggested it was different and depended on them.
But.
Okay.
What would you suggest as our next next steps with this group?
Well, what I would like to see is to do studies and to compare instead of you know, dozens of case reports, to have a series where we treat part of the scar and leave the other part untreated, and compare erbium eupro-fractional with coag, without coag, varying the depths, looking at different endpoints, and looking at different wavelengths. I mean, I know that's more than one study, of course, but you know, this is the Wild West still here. We don't, a lot we don't know.
Yeah, that is so true.
Is it possible to measure the thickness of the scar?
Well, one thing that's been suggested is using high-frequency ultrasound with a, it's the frequency, I think it's 20, is 20 or 25, so it's and I don't have access to the highest frequency of transducer that we have to use is 12, and so that's why I started using the using the laser to measure how thick the scar was.
Just by drilling through it and looking for punctate bleeding.
Right.
Yeah.
So you kind of do a test spot and you see how deep it is?
Yes.
How big of a scar are you treating?
We're not talking 90% of the body surface area. We're talking 10% or less, and usually isolated to face and neck or hands and arms.
Mm-hmm.
Things that people can come in, they can wear, if they can put their clothes over it, then I'm not treating those.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, that's kind of what I'm doing. I mean, the most I've ever done is chest, you know, abdomen, face, neck, and arms. That's the most I've done in one day. You know, even though the legs were involved as well, and you know, that was extensive. I mean, they got hypothermic, you know, because of all the heat loss. And
I'm treating my patients in the office, so
yeah.
So I don't do anywhere near that much. They just can't stand it.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, what are you doing for pain and all that?
Well, I do. I do an hour of lidocaine, prilocaine, phenylephrine, topical. And Zimmer chiller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love my Zimmer too. Are you giving them Valium or anything?
If people are anxious, I'm giving them Valium. Otherwise, not. But to do a Percocet and a Valium, if they have a driver, would probably increase the tolerance. Also, I haven't done that, but that's certainly a possibility.
Chad, I just sent you an email. I sent you an email with the DeepFX settings, the conversion chart.
Okay. Some of the fractal facial positions are also using Toradol.
Yeah, and Toradol is. I've always wondered about using anti-inflammatories how this works is at least presumably is an inflammatory response. Although it may be, you know, different mediators maybe that aren't inhibited by anti-inflammatories. People that use anti-inflammatories for pain seem to be getting just as good a result.
Right. Well, I'm doing such aggressive settings that I'm given Celebrex starting 2 days before and Motrin day after for the next 3 days just because of the swelling discomfort. And, you know, I just want that anti-inflammatory aspect there.
Okay.
I have found that I've recently gone to more and more Motrin post-op, and that has made a difference in a couple of patients. That's just my anecdotal.
In terms of other next steps, is it worth looking at different spot sizes, or does that not matter so much? In terms of fractional spot size?
Yeah, I'm not sure. There's so many different questions that if we answer the ones that we have now, I think that's generally applicable to fractional treatment of any kind of any kind of a lesion, and whether you're talking about aging face or a scar, I don't know that anyone does.
Mm-hmm.
I think my results with the 430 size in the XT are better than they were with the 250 in the first generation of Profractional, but I haven't done side by side to compare it. That's just my impression.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the spot size now? The handpiece for the Profractional?
430.
Is
that correct?
Yeah, it's 430.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, who knows? Again, the only way you're going to know is to, you know,
try
to look
it.
At it. I just really don't think that anyone has any knowledge. I mean, I've probably treated more, you know, a ton of folks, and I have no clue. I mean, there's no way to know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, just like power is a direct correlation to depth of penetration, I think that you're going to see that as well as far as spot size, just because you're going to have less cross-sectional area of water to absorb that one beam. So, you know, again, it depends on what your goal is. I mean, if you're trying to do burn scars, hypertrophic scars, post-op scars, I think that, you know, you might, you know, ideally, you know, based on depth and energy, you're going to want potentially different sizes. I mean, but that's just kind of what depends on what, from a marketing strategy, what you guys want to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously I have my bias because, you know, I do what I do, but, you know, at some point in time I'm not always going to be in the military, so, you know, I got to realize that, you know, doing, you know, taking care. I mean, I get I get kind of the complications from the ENT plastics guys that I've been doing and, you know, getting some decent results. And so, you know, I know that is certainly a, you know, marketable type of thing at some point in time. But, you know, who's going to pay for that? You know,
mm-hmm.
ENT is a patient. Insurance isn't going to pay for it. So that's the dilemma is, you know, who's going to pay for some of these type of, you know, scar type of things, because it's not going to be lumped in with the surgery. So, you know, but yet, I don't know. That's a very philosophical question on,
mm-hmm.
you know, where is this going to lead to as far as
what kind of surgery is he talking about?
Ear, nose, and throat.
Well, what? Just, you know, like, you know, I've gotten a couple of necks that, you know, expanded on them and stuff on one of the guys, and so I've been trying to contract that down with a CO2 or, you know, just any post-op scar that's not ideal. I did a, there was a 17-year-old African-American that had a parathyroidectomy that had a little bit of a hypertrophic scar, and so, you know, I'm trying to help them on that, or, you know, just, you know, the variations on the types of scars are so far-reaching. It's just like, you know, the different types of surgeries, you know, between a cyst and, you know, X-lap. So,
okay.
I don't know. You guys got to decide on which way you want to go. I mean, I think there's tons of studies out there that need to be done. I mean, from pathophysiology to, and, you know, if you study the, I think if you study pathophysiology, that some of your answers as far as the spot size and all that kind of the coag or no coag, I think part of that should be incorporated pathophysiology so that you let the science lead the technology rather than the other way around.
Right, right.
Well, that's exactly why we wanted to call this group together and really get this dialogue going. I mean, we know there's a lot of different treatments being tried and developed every day. So if we can help enable that or, you know, guide some of that, create the right tools or better tools, that's our goal.
Okay.
All right. Very, very good. Is there any plan at Cyton to have I don't know what your organizational chart is like, but a division or whatever that would help coordinate research and somebody that would you know, help put together multi-center trials of these things?
Absolutely.
Okay, great.
Okay.
All right. Very good.
So I guess Mike will put together a summary.
Yeah.
Statement and kind of put together a wish list and
circulate that.
Yeah, I'll circulate that, and you know, this is certainly not a one-time deal. We want to stay in close contact with this group going forward. If you go ahead and email me if you'd like to exchange emails with each other, that'd be fantastic. I can send them out.
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay.
All right. Fantastic, guys.
All right.
Okay.
Any closing words?
Well, thanks. Thanks a lot for putting this together. I've learned a lot from listening already in this hour.
Okay,
great. Excellent. Yeah, we did too, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, and thanks for the for the chart here. I'm actually gonna go get it tonight and look at that.
Well, thank you all. We'll go take some more drugs.
Okay.
Bye.
I am too. Only it's gonna be grape derived.
Bye bye.
All right, take care, guys.
Thanks.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Stop recording.
So it's recording.
Stop recording.
Oh. Yeah, I suspect if you just end it, you're done.
Okay, I didn't know if it would.
Thank you.